Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Deferential Habeas Standard of Review Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On May 3, 2010, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Renico v. Lett. The question in this case was whether a federal district court erroneously granted a writ of habeas corpus to a state prisoner under the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act of 1986, or AEDPA. In this case, the district court issued the writ to Reginald Lett, the respondent, on the ground that his Michigan murder conviction violated the Double Jeopardy Clause of the U.S. Constitution. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit affirmed. In a 6-3 opinion delivered by Chief Justice Roberts, the court held that the Michigan Supreme Court's application of federal law was not unreasonable, and that the lower federal courts misapplied the AEDPA's deferential standard of review. To discuss the case, we have Kent S. Scheidegger, who is the legal director of the Criminal Justice Legal Foundation. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Scheidegger.
On May 3rd, the United States Supreme Court decided the case of Renico v. Lett. This decision demonstrates how review of a trial judge's decision becomes more deferential at each phase of review. Reginald Lett was tried for murder in Detroit, Michigan. After 2 days of deliberations, the jury was unable to reach a verdict. Following a brief discussion between the trial judge and the foreman, the judge asked if the jury was going to be able to reach a unanimous verdict, and the foreman said no. The judge declared a mistrial and set the case for a new trial. The prosecutor and defense lawyer were both present, and neither objected. Lett was convicted in the second trial. The jury deliberated for only 3 hours. On appeal, Lett claimed that the first judge had declared a mistrial without manifest necessity, and therefore the Double Jeopardy Clause barred the second trial. The Michigan Court of Appeals agreed and reversed, but the Michigan Supreme Court disagreed and reinstated the judgment. Lett applied to the Federal District Court for a writ of habeas corpus. That court found a double jeopardy violation and granted relief. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit affirmed. The United States Supreme Court then decided to review the case. The Double Jeopardy Clause of the Fifth Amendment generally protects a criminal defendant against being tried a second time. However, it has long been recognized that a trial judge may declare a mistrial and set a case for retrial if there is a manifest necessity to do so. A deadlocked jury provides the requisite necessity. In the 1978 case of Arizona v. Washington, the Supreme Court recognized that appellate courts must generally defer to the trial judge's determination that the jury is actually deadlocked. On top of the deference that appellate courts must give a trial judge's decision, there is an additional layer of deference that Congress has required the federal courts to give to the final decision of the state courts. In this case, the decision of the Michigan Supreme Court. From 1953 to 1996, the rule was that a federal district court or court of appeals would re-decide de novo any questions of federal law decided by the state courts on direct appeal. In the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act of 1996, Congress decided to change this rule. The new deferential standard, the Supreme Court has said, quote, demands that state court decisions be given the benefit of the doubt, unquote. The question to be decided, then, changes at each phase of review. The trial judge simply had to decide if the jury was genuinely deadlocked. The Michigan appellate courts had to decide if the trial judge had exceeded the bounds of sound discretion, not necessarily whether they would have made the same decision. The federal courts on habeas corpus are one step further removed. The question on habeas is whether the state courts had unreasonably applied the clearly established Supreme Court precedent. On direct appeal, the case was close, as the difference of opinion between the Michigan Court of Appeals and the Michigan Supreme Court illustrates. There are different plausible interpretations of the record, and neither outcome is plainly correct or incorrect. This is precisely the situation where Congress has decided that the state court decision should stand. The Supreme Court expressly refrained from deciding whether the Michigan Supreme Court was correct, noting that it was not necessary to decide that question. Once the habeas court recognizes that the question before the state court was close and could reasonably have been decided either way, its job is finished. The Supreme Court noted in conclusion that the statute, quote, prevents defendants and the federal courts from using federal habeas corpus review as a vehicle to second-guess the reasonable decisions of the state courts, unquote. Properly applied, this standard would make most habeas cases straightforward, and they could be easily and quickly decided. Few state appellate decisions are so clearly wrong as to be unreasonable, and those are generally easy to spot. That was the purpose of Congress in enacting the statute. Yet there has been massive resistance to this standard among the lower federal courts, and correcting their failure to apply this standard has been a large part of the Supreme Court's docket since 1996. The Lett case is one more in that series, and its holding is not particularly remarkable. The most important aspect of the decision may be in the court's recognition that whenever the question is close on direct appeal, it is necessarily clear on federal habeas. If the district courts and circuit courts would take that lesson to heart, the purpose of this statute, to reduce delay, could finally be achieved.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.